Preparation for the Kingdom.
You know, it wasn't too long ago that there was a scare given to all of us about the global warming that's taking place. There's no doubt about it that there is a global warming. And it has to do with carbon dioxide and how it is put, is going into the atmosphere from every combustion process. When anything burns, whether any fuel is burned, why, there is always carbon dioxide and water as byproducts of the combustion. And the human beings and the animals that are taking in fuel as food, just as we did a short while ago, we burn that. And as we do, why, we exhale carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. All animals do. But here again is this remarkable process that God has set in motion, that all the green plants absorb this carbon dioxide through photosynthesis, sunlight, and they make it into the food that we find on our table again later on. And so there isn't an accumulation of carbon dioxide for that. There's complete balance of what all of us are exhaling is being absorbed by the plants, and it's being made back into carbohydrates for us to eat or have fuel again. But there are other kinds of combustion processes. We have to have a lot of electricity today, so all of our utilities are putting off a large amount of carbon dioxide into the air. And every single process of energy requires that in one way or another. And with the time that we're living in, with knowledge and learning increasing and many running to and fro, the knowledge and learning has given us many wonderful inventions, but in order to implement them, it requires a lot of energy. And this means more carbon dioxide. And likewise, to run to and fro, whether we are using the automobile, which is spewing out all of the carbon dioxide, or the train, or the plane, energy is required, and that's what's happening. So as I said, about a few years ago, it was in 1983, we were all shocked by an article that appeared in the New York Times in our area, and probably in other newspapers, another place, where the EPA had published as front page news that the EPA is now gone on record that the warming of the earth, known as a greenhouse effect, will begin in the 1990s. Okay, we're in this 1993. And it says that the director of strategic studies for the agency said in an interview, "We are trying to get people to realize that changes are coming sooner than they expected. Major changes will be here by the years 1990 to 2000, and we have to learn how to live with these." Well, as I say, we're already into that era. We're approaching the year 2000. It's not too far away. And this was intended to get the people to realize that there was a serious problem here. And they particularly stressed that what was going to happen would be climatic changes everywhere. And with these climatic changes, it would disrupt the food production. And that there would be the melting of polar ice, and that it would cause flooding of the coastal waters. We had a storm up in our way that caused flooding of the coastal waters, and the people were pretty well shocked. So I guess when they read something like this is coming as a threat where they will be permanently displaced, it's no wonder there is fear on their part. But scientists have been looking at this problem now for some time. This was not something that was new. For the last 100 years, there's been an awareness that since we've been able to measure the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that there are subtle changes taking place. And what we are interested in is what does the Bible tell us about man's experience along this line. Well, we know this, that when it came to use of fuels for making foods palatable or for warmth, that there's not much that is mentioned concerning all of these things prior to the flood. But starting with Noah's flood, we see that Abraham, as he was taking Isaac up the mountain, is the first mention of any kind of material that was used as a fuel. And as Brother Stein mentioned, Isaac had the wood on his back. He was carrying it. That was the fuel that was going to be in Abraham. And they had the fire, too, for the sacrifice. Earlier, when Noah came with the ark on Mount Ararat, he offered a sacrifice to the Lord, and he had to use probably some fuel, though nothing is mentioned along that line. And with the flood, after the flood, there was a climatic change, and there was a need now for fuel to be used to warm people, not just for the matter of making foods palatable. And since that time, there has been a lot of need for more and more fuel of one kind or another. And it's always been amazing to me how the Heavenly Father, when He was preparing the earth for habitation, in the times, those epochs that we know of as the creative days mentioned in the first chapter of Genesis, how during that time, He so carefully laid in the surface of the earth all of the things that man has been able to find as what would they call fossil fuels. The oil, the coal, the natural gas that's there. And that they would find this at just a critical time when there would be such a need for it in order to implement all of the inventions that came upon the scene with the knowledge and learning being increased. But this has also caused this problem here now that they're all concerned about. The global warming. As we said, this concern now on the part of the scientific community led Congress in 1980 in their Energy Security Act to mandate a study be made by the National Research Council about the effects of the carbon dioxide and what it would do to this, what they call the greenhouse effect. Because carbon dioxide, as it increases in the atmosphere, prevents the radiation of heat from the Earth's surface. As the sun beats down on the Earth, the heat gets trapped, very much like in the greenhouse. You get the warmth trapped there. And there are other gases that are involved as well. There's nitrous oxide that has the same effect. There's methane that has this effect. And not just carbon dioxide. That's the principal one. That's the main one. And so they mandated that this study should be made. And as it was made, they finally were ready to report their results. And on October 13, 1983, they decided that they should invite all of the scientific attachés of the Russians. Remember, they were at that time the other superpower here upon the earth, and of the Chinese and other communist representatives, as well as other people. And they were going to present the findings that they had. Well, that's when the EPA upstaged them or scooped them using the material from this report that they were able to see in advance and got it into the newspapers to scare the daylights out of the people. Well, the actual report itself, when it was given, was not as pessimistic as what the EPA said. Because, as I mentioned, the EPA said there would be rapid melting of the ice caps, flooding of coastal areas, climatic changes, disruption of the food change. But the NRC report was far more subdued. It says it could have benefits for some, It could have disadvantages for others, and it advised research, monitoring, and caution, but not panic. That was the actual report. That's what it said. Not all this other stuff. There was an article that was published in the Dawn in 1952, which was a most interesting article. It had to do with the provision of food for the people of the earth. And it was a highlights article in the Dawn in 1952, and before we knew anything about this global warming and greenhouse effect. And I'd just like to read some of the things that were being cited from the Time magazine and other people at the time that had been written. And it says here about the fact that there were a lot of problems in getting enough food for the people. And it says, even with maximum yield, unprecedented land reclamation, some wonder if all could be fed. However, as man laudably wrestles with this problem, there are indications in the earth that God is doing something. It appears that he has taken steps to remove from cold storage vast quantities of land which ultimately will be required to provide for man's sustenance and habitation. In a recent issue of Time magazine, in an article under the caption, Retreat of Cold, facts are cited to show that the wall of cold caused by the polar ice cap is gradually retreating, permitting crops to grow on hitherto barren land. And quoting from that article directly, it says, the time may come when cotton will be grown in the state of New York and corn far north in Ontario. Dr. George H.T. Kimball, British-born director of the American Geographical Society, told that the climate of the North Atlantic region is growing unmistakably warmer. Along the bleak natural boundary between Canada's forests and the barren Arctic, the trees are marching northward. Saplings of tamarack, spruce, and birch are appearing where none grew before. In eastern Canada, cereals can be grown 100 miles farther north than ever before. Ontario is already experimenting with cotton. That was a surprise. In Russia, the southern limit of permafrost, permanently frozen ground, is receding northward up to 100 yards a year. Many Norwegian slopes are raising barley where only grass grew before. Even the fish of the North Atlantic are taking advantage of the change. The cod, which are very sensitive to temperature changes, have migrated northward some 500 miles since 1920. That's the end of the quotation from the Times article. And then the article in the Dawn continues saying, these facts make one ask, how far north will the cold recede? Will the same action take place in the South Polar regions? We expect this thawing out to continue until both extremities are entirely cleared of ice and the climate at the poles, yes, everywhere in the earth, will be pleasantly mild and suitable for man's habitation. May I make a comment? You won't be getting the snowbirds then coming down to Florida. You'll have Florida climate all over. That's what it's saying. Well, let's continue. It says, this expectation is not merely wishful thinking, nor based alone upon the fact of the slow receding of cold in a polar region. Once before, the land under the ice caps was suitable for vegetation. Why not again? Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd, the explorer, brought back from the South Pole region samples of tropical plants found under the ice. And we know that the same warm climate which could grow such tropical flora in the Antarctic Circle also was present in the Arctic Circle. There have been found in Siberia complete mastodons embedded in ice, and in the same general area were discovered tons of elephant tusks. Although differing somewhat from our present-day elephant, these extinct mastodons, in order to live, required the same warm climate and lush vegetable growth. And of great interest is the fact that these animals found embedded in ice had undigested food in their stomachs and unmasticated grass in their mouths. I might say that perhaps you read a Reader's Digest article some years back, around the time that this article was written, where they said that some of these mastodons were found with buttercups in their mouth. And in order to have buttercups grow, you had to have a temperature of 45 degrees in this Arctic area, or this Siberian frozen area. So this article was very interesting from that standpoint, but how things have changed. Now they're predicting doom, and that isn't right. And that's what we would like to talk about. What does this all mean? Does it mean that we have to stop the use of fossil fuels? Well, we've got a very environmentally oriented vice president now by the name of Gore. And they're proposing to have taxes that will be tied in with the carbon content of the fuels. That's somewhat in that direction. You see, because coal gives off the most carbon dioxide for the amount of thermal energy that it will give, and something like natural gas will give much less. And so they're going to some tie in this with the idea, you know, they're all concerned about the global warming. That was one of the topics that was discussed at the Rio de Janeiro last year when they had a meeting of all the countries about the environmental problems. But what was very conspicuous by its absence was the information about how fast plants will grow when the carbon dioxide level goes up. But there were some experiments run by the Department of Agriculture. Not very well advertised, not very well known. They only are found in technical magazines. And they, you know, put a tent around certain plots of land, and they would have the carbon dioxide level at the normal level that it is. It's been constantly, we talk about parts per million differences, but for the longest time, we always talked about having a 0.035% carbon dioxide level in the air. And now that that's starting to creep up, this is where there's been some concern. And putting in another, that's 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And if it goes up 50 parts per million, 100 parts per million, that's all it has, then what is the effect upon agriculture? Well, in these experiments, the Department of Agriculture found that when they put a little more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, yes, indeed, plants grow faster. Now this, as you can see, could be the answer, the beautiful answer to how the food problem gets solved for the whole world of mankind as population continues to increase and as the Lord brings back people in the kingdom from the grave. In any case, this is, as I say, conspicuous by its absence. So as we look at the situation, we can either be pessimistic about it and say, yes, there's going to be flooding of the coasts, there's going to be a disruption of the food chain, there's going to be climatic changes, or else we can be optimistic and say there's going to be an increase in the growth of plants and of food for the world. There's going to be a much more tolerable climate for everybody instead of having the extremes that we have in the north that makes all these snowbirds come down to Florida. Or there can also be no change in the actual level of the waters in the coastal, and there won't be any coastal flooding. That's the optimistic viewpoint. You know, just before all this study was taking place, the Office of Science Technology had the Massachusetts Institute of Technology conduct a study on this very matter of how much carbon dioxide is being released into the atmosphere. And these people took the last 20 years from 1958 to 1978 in making their study. And I don't know exactly how they did it, but apparently they were thorough and said that they were able to calculate, it's only an estimate, but it's still a calculated estimate, that in the time of those 20 years, there was 78 billion tons of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere. Now, don't forget, we're talking about tons. That's 2,000 pounds. You multiply that by that 78 billion by 2,000, and you've got the national debt and then some. See, and that's the amount that went up into the air. But now they measure the amount that is actually in the air from 1958 to 1978, and they can only account for 42 billion tons. Well, what happened to the rest of it? They don't know. It could either have been taken up by more rapid plant growth, or it could have been absorbed into the oceans, and that would help to feed the fish, the plankton needed. And these are the things that no one has studied yet and really come up with a decent conclusion. And so we see that as scientists look at this problem, they stand in awe. You know, they're not sure what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. But we know, dear friends, that God is too wise to err, too loving to be unkind. He is too just to be unfair, and too powerful to be helpless in this matter. And so whatever is happening, you can be assured that God has his hand over it, and it is for eventually the good of mankind. And I think, therefore, that what we are seeing is a preparation for the kingdom. This is one of the signs. Now, we heard this morning about Israel being a sign that we know so well, a sign of the proximity of the kingdom. And this is now another sign. And that's why we've picked this particular verse right there in the 62nd chapter of Isaiah, that's telling about the completion of the church class. But we know that there have to be other things happen. Climatic changes of all kinds will occur. And these are all mentioned in the 35th chapter of Isaiah, a chapter that we know so well and read so many times about how the desert shall blossom as the rose and blossom abundantly. And it's not talking about irrigation either. It's talking about climatic changes that will provide more rain in the right places, like the Sahara Desert that needs rain, like all the desert areas that we have in our country and in Australia and all over the world. There's so many places, huge amounts of land that are desert. Remember how it was when Jesus was in the ship and fell asleep, and a storm came up and a wind was blowing, and the disciples thought they were going to perish, and they woke him up and he rebuked the wind and the waves, and they said, "What manner of man is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" But yes, friends, that was just a demonstration of how our Lord indeed is going to control the elements over this world so that the rain will fall in the right places, not out in the ocean where it's not needed, but on the land where it is needed, and where there will be an abundance there of vegetation. And with the increased carbon dioxide level that will come at just at the right level, because I'm sure that eventually solar power is going to be used, the Lord will place it into somebody's mind. It'll come up, be like a light going on in their brain, you know, and they'll come up with just the right amount of ideas to get the efficiency up. Because man, as he struggled with solar power, he has a cell now that some time ago was 1% efficient and had need for electrodes being changed every few weeks, to now where he's got one that's 14% efficient, and the electrode will last now for months. Well, they can't compete at all with fossil fuels. But one of these days, the light will go on, and here's the sun with all of that energy available. And a scientific community saying, absolutely frustrated, says, "Grab me, here am I, I'm free." And they don't know how to do it efficiently, that is. But they will. And so we see how in this beautiful prophecy in Isaiah 35, it says how other things that we know will happen, of the eyes of the blind being opened, the ears of the deaf being unstopped, the lame man being able to leap his heart, and then this highway that will be cast up, that will have all the obstacles removed. All of these stones that Isaiah 65 is talking about will be taken out. And there will be no lion there. Satan will be bound, but the redeemed shall walk there. But going to Isaiah 65, we realize that none of this can take place, dear friends, until the church is complete. And so Isaiah 65 is telling us about the completion of the church, the event that we're waiting for, that we've been watching for, that we've been trying to, that we've been praying for. And so when he says, "For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory. And thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy God. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, which means my delight is in her, and thy land Beulah, which is married, for the Lord delighted in thee, and thy land shall be married. For as a young man marrieth a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee, and as the bridegroom rejoiceth over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee." See, in this prophecy, friends, there is, as I say, primarily the completion of the church. This is the bridegroom rejoicing over the bride. And the expressions that are found here are also found in a 54th chapter of Isaiah that is talking about the final effects of the grace covenant pictured by Sarah. 54th chapter of Isaiah. It's quoted by the Apostle Paul in the 4th chapter of Galatians when he's giving us this allegory. And some of these same expressions are found there. And as we go on, it says, "I have set watchmen upon thy walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace, day nor night. Ye that make mention of the Lord, keep not silence, and give him no rest." Or really, it should be, "The Lord will not rest until he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. The Lord hath sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no more give thy corn to be meat for thine enemies, and the sons of the stranger shall not drink thy wine for the which thou hast labored. But they have gathered it, shall eat it, and praise the Lord. And they that have brought it together, shall drink it in the courts of my holiness." And then we have the text that we've used. Go through the gates. Prepare you the way of the people. Cast up the highway. Gather out the stones. Lift up a standard for the people. Behold, the Lord hath proclaimed unto the end of the world. Say ye to the daughter of Zion, behold, thy salvation cometh. Oh, how glad we are to read that. You can be sure of it. The church will be completed, dear friends, and it won't be long. We're at the threshold of the kingdom. "And behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of the Lord. And thou shalt be called sought out, a city not forsaken." May the Lord bless us as we endeavor to continue to walk faithfully, to be found worthy to be among those that will be so named. May the Lord add his blessing.